Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. This is episode 436 on the 14th of July, 2022. I'm your host, Harry, joined today by Connor.
Hello and afternoon, everyone.
Oh, hello and good afternoon, yes. I'm very excited to be on with today because Connor and I have not yet hosted the podcast together, so we'll see how this goes. And today we're going to be talking about the rise of the Ripperverse, the Beanie Man bringing down the Republic, and the compassionate infanticide, which is, in fact, the greatest act of love that you can perform. And without any further ado, let's get into the news. So, the Ripperverse is rising. If you've been watching the podcast since I joined, you'll know that occasionally I have covered some things to do with the comic book industry in the West. In fact, it was my first segment that I did on the podcast, talking about the disastrous and dire straits that Western comics have found themselves in, mostly DC and Marvel over in America. And I thought it would be a good time to cover some stuff that's going on in Western comics that's actually a little bit of a white pill. I promised you guys a white pill after yesterday. And I thought Connor would probably be the best person to do it with because you yourself are actually a bit of a comics aficionado as well.
I spend a stupid amount of money on stuff I probably should have outgrown, but yeah, my first was Batman 613, 614 as part of the Hush saga, so I was really fortunate to grow up. They still got Lost in the Move, but I used to have the original single issues, and now I buy a stupid amount of omnibuses. I've got like three full-on IKEA bookshelves.
I have recently been going on a spree selling my old omnibuses, sadly, because
what did you used to have?
I've just recently sold like the Grant Morrison's massive one that he did with Image, I think it was, or Vertigo.
Oh, Invisibles.
Yes, the Invisibles. Right, okay. I sold that. I sold Doom Patrol, the Grant Morrison omnibus. I am keeping my omnibus of the new X-Men because that was my first omnibus and it was the run that introduced me to X-Men, so I was very happy.
Marvel.
I enjoy Marvel comic books. Anyway, so I thought this would be a good chance to have a discussion with Connor about this and hopefully bring some good news for once. But before I go any further, I'll just point you towards Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is Hot Garbage, a recent review that I did of the latest Doctor Strange film, which was in fact a stealth Scarlet Witch film. Either way, it was terrible, both in terms of plot, contrivances, just terrible character writing, and the fact that it had some really strange political messaging that was simultaneously pushed in your face and also not mentioned at all, which was quite unusual. But if you're interested, you can find that on the website, and you can also find it on YouTube, so check it out there to see my first dive into some proper film reviewing, which I really enjoyed. But anyway, let's go a bit further here. So I'll point you towards my very first segment here, Western Comics Are Dying, where I do look a little bit like Shaggy in that shirt, I have to admit. So I have covered this before as part of this, just to give you a bit of a reminder. So there was stuff going on where the entirety of the Western comic industry, both in Marvel and DC, were being outsold by one manga, Demon Slayer. That one manga, all the sales were outselling every single comic book that they were putting forward. And there's a good reason for this, which is Western comics have long ago abandoned any pretense at good storytelling, good writing, good characters, and are only there to push the message. And this is something that a lot of people have recognized, including those at Comicsgate, which was a movement separating itself from the mainstream comics industry and even took along very well-known artists and illustrators like Ethan Van Sciver with it, who I don't know if you're familiar with his
fantastic
work.
Fantastic. Green Lantern Run, incredible. Also took Chuck Dixon, the guy who essentially took over from Marv Wolfman when Tim Drake was created as the third Robin and did Robin for 150 issues. He created Bane, etc. He's incredible.
Yeah, Dixon's fantastic writer, also incredibly based.
Yes.
If you're aware of anything to do with Chuck Dixon, AA recently had a conversation with him where it was very interesting to listen to. But they're very interested in pushing the message. Marvel has characters like Snowflake and Safe Space now. DC has a comic book called I Am Not Starfire about Starfire's daughter, who is a fat Asian stand-in for the writer.
Have you seen the new Justice League in 5G's future state?
I don't want to.
Okay, so let me break this down quickly. 5G was an initiative about fifth generation. It was meant to be a diverse reboot. And when they realized it wasn't going to sell, and DC were going through some internal turmoil being bought by AT&T, they decided to do it as future state, as in hypothetical alternative future event. And you had a black non-binary Flash called Kid Quick, a female Aquaman, a black Batman written by the writer of 12 Years a Slave, John Kent Superboy, who's now gay, and a bisexual Brazilian Wonder Woman.
Of course.
Abject cancer.
And how well did this sell?
Well, considering you hadn't heard of it...
I doubt it sold very well. But this is all on top of the fact that comics in general are really difficult to get into if you're only just getting into it, because a lot of them, especially Batman and DC, have 80-plus years of continuity. But this is important because the comics industry and comic book characters and stories in general have been pointed out to basically be the new mythology that we put forward. Grant Morrison has a book on this, comparing the characters of DC to the Greek myths of old, because especially given that they're pointed, kind of marketed towards kids, people think of comics as a kid's thing, it's important that people who are reading this are getting good moral lessons. And that's not what they're getting right now, I'll tell you that. And you get writers like, you can even see in the still here, Kelly Sue DeConnick, saying Captain America's a social justice warrior. She also notoriously said, if you don't like my politics, don't buy my comic. To which everybody went, okay then.
Yep.
You know, you set the terms.
She single-handedly killed Aquaman under her run, so...
Yeah, she did. And we've also got the just generally terrible artwork being put forward in these comics. Like, Ethan Van Sciver has been very good at calling this out. Like, this is Captain Marvel. It's not... it's not the one from Jay and Silent Bob.
It's not the one that died from cancer in the 70s, despite the bulge.
No, this is supposed to be a woman.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find the original tweet that Skyver put out for this one because I think he deleted it. But if you go to the next link as well, this is also supposed to be Captain Marvel. This is quite notorious because she looks a little bit more like Miss Piggy than she does a superhero. And the fact of the matter is that this is the sort of stuff you get all the time. Anything feminine is being defeminized and made more masculine. Anything masculine is being feminized and made less masculine. They're trying to reverse the roles. You see it in the TV shows and films as well right now. They're trying to just take the characters that have been iconic for years and replace them as a way to kind of try and sneak in these new role models using the off the backs of the previous ones that we actually liked, and it never really works.
Terraforming children's perception of reality and skewing the morality. If we can just go back to the last one just for one second. Yeah. I also hate, and Tom King does this in his Batman run, the left-wing meme Iliad of a caption. Comics is a visual medium, but instead the Marvel writers, if you look at the Women of Marvel podcast, they not only is it representation, they seem to want to have all their comics about women doing things and being here and present and friendship, and it's like, no, the original Daredevil writer actually had a conversation with them, I think it was Ann Nocietti, who wrote Daredevil in the 80s, and said it always builds towards a fight, and they said, oh well, comics just aren't like that anymore, and that's why you get these social justice diatribes that utterly disrupt the form and the medium.
I mean, I will say Brian Michael Bendis on the Ultimate Spider-Man run originally, which I actually enjoy, was very bad for this. You would have a page that is just a few little boxes with the images in, and then just the entire thing would be dialogue. But at the very least, he wasn't using that dialogue to push a message. He was using it to try and tell you something about the characters and tell you something about the plot that was going on, even if it was quite a cack-handed way of going about it in a visual medium.
My, how that changed in his Superman run.
Oh, really?
His Superman run is notoriously dreadful. Tons of retcons, and it essentially laid the groundwork. He aged up John Kent, hence the reason why now Tom Taylor's taken over and made him the compassionate young bi guy who goes on school climate strikes.
Yeah, and if you're all confused about all of these discussions we're having, this is the difficulty with Western comics, even before they inserted all of the social justice rhetoric into it, because honestly, it's really hard to keep up, especially when every so often, like every 10 or so years, they'll just reboot the universe and take it back to zero, and then they'll realize, oh, that was a mistake, and they'll unreboot the universe, and then they'll do it all over again. Keeps happening, makes it very, very difficult, but there are people out there who are trying to change things, like Comicsgate, and this isn't exactly comic book, but if you're aware of Razor Fist and a fan of him like I am, you should be aware of Night Vale, which is a project that he's doing in collaboration with George Alexopoulos, the right-wing meme artist who does some fantastic work. And it's a pulp noir fiction novel set in a fantasy land, a low fantasy land, as he describes it, doing like noir crime tales. Sounds very, very interesting. I actually need to read it myself. Yeah. But they're little novellas, and he's working on the second chapter right now because there are lots of illustrations in these. And if we just go to the next link, we can see the artwork. If you just click on some of that stuff, George Alexopoulos, people say, oh, he's only got one art style, but seriously, the man is insanely talented. So if you're just looking for where all of the artistic talent seems to have migrated from when it comes to comic books, I think we know where.
Yeah, the cross-hatching is incredible there. It's almost like... back before they really overdid it in the 90s when they used to use it for shading. This is, I'm actually really interested in doing this. I didn't even know this was a project.
Yeah, I'd only found out a few weeks ago when Razorfist started posting these images from it, and it really did capture my attention, because when you see artwork this good, especially in black and white, because of the amount of detail that you have to put in to make things stand out when you're using a monochromatic color scheme, is very, very, very impressive. But the other thing that's going on is that if you're aware of Eric July, who is a cultural commentator, a political figure on YouTube, who talks about stuff a lot, he's a commentator, he's an ANCAP libertarian, he's big into comic books, and he is one of the most principled people out there when it comes to this, because he always says, if you don't like what Disney and Marvel and DC are doing, just don't give them your money. Just don't give them your money, which is something I respect, and he does stick to that. Even when he's criticizing the work, he says, you know, I criticize the things that the writers are saying, that the producers are saying, that the people in charge are saying. I have not seen this property, though, because it's a product that I would be supporting these companies that I hate. I would be giving money to those people. And he has decided to start his very own comic book company called Ripperverse Comics. And I just wanted to cover this because I think it's a really almost heartwarming story of support coming from the community for dissident actors within the mainstream, people who are saying, no, we want to reject what you're doing, and we want to take things back to the essence of what they should be.
Rather than just us standing like William F. Buckley athwart history yelling stop into the wind, he's taking the initiative to put his best foot forward and actually create a positive vision for the future, much like all of the original comic book creators did way back in the 30s when they founded this medium.
Yeah, he's walking the walk as well as talking the talk.
Exactly.
And he's also promised that despite the fact that he's a very political person, being an ANCAP, he will not be beating anybody over the head with politics or messages of liberty. He will just be trying to tell a good story with this, which is going to be the first series that he releases, Isom number one. And interestingly, they even have a code of ethics, which it would be nice to see most comic book companies adopt nowadays. And they've got one, respect the customer. If only more companies adopted that kind of ideal nowadays. They've also got canon and continuity. They want to have a full universe come out of this, something that hopefully within in the future could come to rival Marvel and DC, although we'll see. And the other one he's got is a comprehensive timeline. And like I said, it's really, really difficult to follow most comics, and this will be interesting because it's an opportunity for a lot of people to jump in at ground zero with this, because people will be able to follow it much more easily that way. But they also, he says, we value canon and continuity. It's important that you're able to follow the timeline as these characters grow. This will be especially helpful for those of you who become customers years after our founding, which is something that Marvel and DC have consistently fumbled the ball on. They make it very, very inaccessible, I would say.
Well, I've been trying to build an actual issue-by-issue chronological timeline of all of DC. I started with Batman, I built it out just because everything's so interlaced. And you find, even with graphics, when they try to reset the timeline with Zero Hour in 1993, the years just don't add up, because you can't compress all of Superman's history post-crisis even into 8 years between him meeting Batman. And because of human incompetence, as you said before, things like Flashpoint that gets changed, then it gets changed to Doomsday Clock, and then that gets folded into the new Dark Crisis.
I think one of the worst things that came after Flashpoint, because that was the one that led into the new 52, wasn't
yes.
it? Was that you had characters like Batman, who are now established within this new universe, to have only been around for 5 years, still has 80 years worth of backstory.
Four Robins.
You need to follow. Yeah, somehow in 5 years he's managed to have four Robins, one of who's grown into an adult Nightwing. It's obvious nonsense, and it shows that there's a massive lack of coordination going on behind the scenes with the editors, because otherwise you would catch that sort of stuff. Or it's just laziness because you want to reset it while still keeping the things you like about what was there before.
The worst was Wally West, and Eric often bangs on about this as well, but it was really personal to me because I grew up loving Wally from Young Justice particularly, and then I read some of the 90s comics, and then I picked up New 52, and suddenly Wally is completely gone, and they wanted to focus entirely on Barry because Geoff Johns was the spearhead behind it, and he loves the Silver Age. And then everyone clamored for Wally, and they went, fine, we'll introduce him. They said, here he is, he's hip, young, new African-American Wallace West. And we were like, that's not Wally West. And they went, okay, you just hate it because you're racist, and don't disrespect your customers like this. Then they brought him back for Rebirth, and then they character assassinated him, thank you Tom King, in Heroes in Crisis. And that's why after 2018 I swear off buying anything from DC.
Probably appropriately so as well, but from all that we've just said, that is just everything wrong with the comic book industry right now, in a nutshell, is that they bring a character back, who's completely different. They've even race swapped him. They've just stuck the same name on him and gone, see, he's the same. You like him, don't you? And I think we can see this not just in comics, but across basically the entire entertainment industry.
Progressive skin suit.
Yeah, progressives are taking classic characters and just using their names to put forward their own ideas, and their ideas are always terrible because they don't care about stories, they only care about the message. And if we move along, they put forward for this a pre-order campaign for the first issue of Isom. And do you mind just reloading that page just so we can see that? Something has gone wrong with the page, but they've got a pre-order campaign going on, and it launched at around 3:30 in our time on July 11th. And let's go to the next one to see how this went, because Eric was, you know, feeling happy about it, but he didn't expect this. Yeah. They got, in the after only about a day and a half, $1 million in donations from the crowdfunding campaign, which just goes to show, I've checked it out, there's about 16,000 people have donated to it, leading to over $1 million. And it really does show the support from the community it gets when somebody just puts forward a product that people actually want.
Cyberfrog got similar numbers as well, but it didn't get it nearly that fast.
I know, it's ridiculous that, I think this is a really promising thing for something that is this new and this different, that's going to, well, this different nowadays, but it's like 20 years ago, we want to write comics that people like and stories that people can follow, would have been the norm, you'd have hoped, but that just shows how far off we are from normal.
Well, even left-wing creators like the contemptible Gail Simone, who invented women in refrigerators, the most odious of tropes that has now, you know, stripped any female character of the ability
to adding stakes to a male character's story is just sexist.
But also then it transferred over to female characters can't be harmed because that's misogyny, so therefore she was always powerful and we can't question her power. But even she was capable of writing Secret Six, Birds of Prey, and they were fantastic runs paired up with great artists like Ed Benes. And now it's just been utterly stripped of moral content. They can't take their minds out of the progressive gutter.
I agree entirely. And he's got some pushback from some people who are saying, because I think it's a 96-page comic, but it's coming at $35. Some people have pushed back against this, saying it's too expensive. He's price gouging. Oh, we should expect this from an ANCAP, shouldn't we? And he's just explaining that the books are on very good paper. They're not printed in China. They're fully new stories. And the fact of the matter is that American comics that cater to their audience are pretty scarce nowadays. So this is the price that we have to pay for things that we actually want, sadly. Don't blame Eric for this. Blame the establishment comic book industry for pushing us to this point. And he's also had some hate mail regarding it. People have been, if we go to the next one, he says, have been called some vile things over the last days by weirdos trying to make an enemy out of him for starting his own comic book company. That's because you're trying to push against the cultural hegemony that is prevailing at the moment, Eric. Anybody who does, you know this as well. I'm not explaining this to you, but I'm just saying it, that this is what's going to happen to anybody who tries to push back against the grand narrative, because don't you know that you're causing violence by publishing comic books starring black heroes that are going to just have normal lives that people are interested in seeing about. Anyway, it has, in fact, actually got past even just the 1 million point at this point. So we've got it, they've got it to $1.4 million right now. The campaign is still open if people want to donate it. If you've watched this segment and thought, wow, something that caters to my tastes, I feel like financially supporting that, you still absolutely can. It's actually at $1.5 million right now. So it's pretty impressive that this has happened. And this is the sort of stuff that I do think is very important to the culture war, because it looks more and more every day like there will develop, especially with the Daily Wire moving into films and such, there will be two parallel cultures developing, one more catered to the right, one more catered to the left. And we just kind of have to accept that that's the way it's going to go as things are right now. And the only thing that we can do is that we can trust that the culture that we're building is good enough and has enough quality material and quality culture in it that it draws people away from toxic, leftist, terrible culture and towards our side, at which point they might hear us out on our arguments a little bit more. So it is very important. Even this pop culture sort of stuff does have an impact, because the leftists have been infecting us with their ideas through pop culture for generations at this point. So it's time that we fight back.
Brilliant. Properly white pilling. Okay.
Yeah.
With that, we'll go on to something a bit more farcical, shall we?
Mm.
Let's talk about how The Beanie Man is bringing down the American Republic. He's decided to just go full revolutionary on us, unfortunately.
Tim Pool's finally hit that nuclear button.
Yep, civil war is starting. But before we start, we shall be doing a plug for John Wheatley and Rory in the Officer's video on architecture. Is modernity the end of architecture?
Did you just call him Rory from The Office?
Yes, I did. Rory from The Office. There you go. That's his new nickname. He's going to hate me for that. I was going to add to this, actually. It reminds me of an essay written by George Orwell called Thoughts on the Common Toad. And he posits that all beauty is taken away from architecture to strip man's soul of his sentiment of religiosity and focus it towards state worship. And so
I can absolutely agree with that. I think there's nothing more demoralizing than walking around a city made up entirely of large grey bricks.
You've been to London then. We actually had on our university campus a prison architect design two of the buildings and everyone just got lost.
They're literally getting prison architect, of course.
But speaking of beautiful buildings, have you been watching the January 6th Capitol Hill stuff recently?
No, I've been ignoring it for the most part.
So has pretty much everyone. Unfortunately, we've set Josh on the task of looking at the timeline and some of the photos from January 6th, so you can go over and look at the website for
this
a full breakdown
of this. This was Josh and Hugo. I don't want to discount Hugo's contribution.
We won't cut out Hugo's contribution. The two of them have both done some great work here. Yes, and this is all perfectly well reported on the website, but we do have some updates. Unfortunately for January 6th, barely anyone has cared about the January 6th hearings because the Republican Research Department decided to look at Google Trends. And as you can see, Jill Biden is getting higher search results than the January 6th hearings the other day.
Oh, so the January 6th hearings is just the blue line,
yes,
which has stayed pretty consistently down because no one cares.
Yes, but you wouldn't think many people care about Jill Biden, would you?
No, I wouldn't actually. That's an interesting point. Why is there such a sudden spike 2 days ago?
I would suggest it's because of the following clip.
Oh. Do you want to play that for us, Michael? Oh, wait.
Trump sent out the tweet.
Is this the wrong clip?
That's the wrong clip. It's
apologies,
the one on the tweet.
Apologies, everybody. Right. If you just want to play the clip there on the tweet.
There we go.
This community, as distinct as the Bogotas of the Bronx, as beautiful as the blossoms of Miami, and as unique as the breakfast tacos here in San Antonio, your strength.
She clearly earned her doctorate.
Yeah, just close that. Imagine going up to, like, I don't know, the Hell's Kitchen in New York, and just going, I love you guys as much as I love the pasta and the spaghetti. It's so pandering.
Yeah. I think Joe Biden's senility seems to be infectious at this point. Now, Jill actually gave this bizarre speech at a luncheon called the Latinx Inclusion, and inclusion is spelled with an X in it, luncheon.
Of course.
Because inclusion
itself... Wait. Oh my God, they put the X in inclusion as well. No word will go un-X'd.
Well, the irony is then you're putting something exclusive in inclusion, but also the idea that the word inclusion is not inclusive enough is staggering. So this luncheon, she gave it at a panel titled A Powerful Case for Equity. Equity in education is the foundation for equity in every other sector, the panel description read. As the pandemic and the Uvalde massacre have underscored the need for culturally and linguistically competent health responses, the nation's leaders join us to chart the path forward for Latino children and families.
I think Uvalde is more for competent police responses, not health responses, but okay.
But it's also very strange that they're using the Uvalde massacre to push Hispanic racial politics, is it? Exactly.
Who was the shooter?
As if the shooter's background was not Hispanic. And so there is something deeply insidious about this, as to where the Biden family seem to be happy to overlook the ethnicity of the shooter whilst also trying to make a racially political point off the backs of school shooting victims.
I would say overlook is probably not the word for it. Downplay,
yes,
is probably what they're trying to do. The same as they do with any time anybody who isn't a white straight male does anything bad.
Yeah, all you have to do is look at the regular mass shooting statistics, and they're actually fairly well balanced in terms of gang shootings, but those aren't often considered in it because they don't make the same political point. But actually, at the January 6th committees, there were some decent clips, as we can move on to. Tim Pool decided to put out an op-ed in Newsweek because he believes he was misrepresented at the hearings.
Oh,
so
really?
if we go to the Newsweek article, we can play the clip at the top of it. It's pretty staggering.
Trump sent out the tweet with his explosive invitation. Trump repeated his big lie and claimed it was, quote, statistically impossible to have lost the 2020 election before calling for a big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there, will be wild. Trump supporters responded immediately. Other key Trump supporters, including far-right media personalities, began promoting the wild protest on January 6th.
And now Donald Trump is calling on his supporters to descend on Washington, D.C., January 6th. This could be Trump's last stand. And it's a time when he has specifically called on his supporters to arrive in D.C. That's something that may actually be the big push Trump supporters need to say, this is it. It's now or never. On that day, Trump says, show up for a protest. It's gonna be wild. And based on what we've already seen from the previous events, I think Trump is absolutely correct.
Well, that doesn't seem to say what the guy is implying that it says.
Absolutely not. He's just reading from a news article, which makes it quite disturbing that Tim Pool can be clipped, smeared in a congressional hearing without a right of reply, because, of course, there's no cross-examination, wasn't invited, and misrepresented in that way just for doing what we're doing, just reading news articles now.
Are we surprised at this point? Especially given that they heavily implied that notorious centrist fence-sitter Tim Pool is a far-right commenter.
Well, even he says in this, he gets some ire from the Patriot.win, formerly the r/TheDonald, for being a sort of centrist and unwilling to commit to election fraud narratives, which obviously being on YouTube, we will not discuss today. Please don't cancel us. But from Tim Pool's article, he says, in what way is reporting the news the equivalent to promoting it? Nowhere in the clip, Rep Raskin played, or even the 30-minute-long podcast, did I ever encourage anyone to go to DC, let alone to engage in any kind of violent protest. In their lead-up to January 6th, I made the same point. Violence will solve nothing. And if January 6th is expected to be violent, people should not go, and I certainly wouldn't be going. My company initially intended to interview people in DC on January 6th, but after warnings of disruptions from our hotel, we decided to avoid DC on that day, just as I advised my followers. Not only that, but I barely qualify as a Trump supporter. Trump's most ardent fans give me a lot of grief for insisting on calling out his flaws. They use a variety of homophobic slurs to denigrate me. I did proudly vote for Trump in 2020, and I explained why I thought he was the better option given the choices. Still, playing my clip alongside Alex Jones and other ardent pro-Trump personalities is well over the top. So, he clearly wants to distance himself from the misrepresentation in the clip, but he has no qualms with actually having voted Trump, and neither should he. Trump, by all metrics, was a successful president. He had some great policies. We don't have to agree with him on everything, like deficit spending, for example. But given the state that the Democrats and Biden are running the country, I don't blame any former Democrat voter for having buyer's remorse or for Tim Pool doubling down on the fact that he made the right decision.
All sounds pretty fair to me.
Unfortunately, there's a hole in Tim Pool's story because there's actually video footage of him inciting a riot.
Oh, no.
The horsemen took your bands. They drove your people into the hills to scratch a living off rocks. Take back the lands they stole from you. Burn every village.
We have only to remove those who oppose us.
As you can see, Ian has many brothers and sisters.
I can't believe that Tim Pool would do such a thing.
No, it's why he keeps the beanie. He keeps all the long white hair. It's actually luscious.
I thought he was hiding his bald spot, but...
No, well, we're breaking all sorts of news on today's podcast. Speaking of the prophet, whose I was right jar overfloweth, Alex Jones was included alongside Tim Pool and two fellas named Salty Cracker and Matt Bracken. The idea that Salty Cracker was read out in a congressional hearing means that we really do live in Crown World, in the Democrats' digital perp walk. We can play this quick clip here.
Other key Trump supporters, including far-right media personalities, began promoting the wild protest on January 6th.
It's Saturday, December 19th, the year is 2020, and one of the most historic events in American history has just taken place. President Trump, in the early morning hours today, tweeted that he wants the American people to march on Washington, D.C. on January 6th, 2021.
And now Donald Trump is calling on his supporters to descend on Washington, D.C., January 6th.
He is now calling on we the people to take action and to show our numbers.
We're going to only be saved by millions of Americans moving to Washington, occupying the entire area, if necessary, storming right into the Capitol. You know, there we know the rules of engagement. If you have enough people, you can push down any kind of fence or a wall.
This could be Trump's last stand. And it's a time when he has specifically called on his supporters to arrive in D.C. That's something that may actually be the big push Trump supporters need to say. This is it. It's now or never.
You better understand something, son. You better understand something. Red wave, bitch. Red wave. This is going to be a red wedding going down January 6th.
On that day, Trump says, show up for a protest. It's going to be wild. And based on what we've already seen from the previous events, I think Trump is absolutely correct.
Motherfucker, you better look outside. You better look out January 6th. Kick that fucking door open. Look down the street. There's going to be a million plus geeked up armed Americans.
The time for games is over. The time for action is now. Where were you when history called? Where were you when you and your children's destiny and future was on the line?
No, I think it's incredibly unfair to conflate both
Jones and... In that
Jones
clip, you heard one of Trump's supporters predict a red wedding, which is a pop culture reference to mass slaughter.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly unfair to conflate Jones and Tim Pool. Tim just reading an article, Jones not actually even saying specifically where in Washington to go, with Bracken, who actually said storm the Capitol, which don't do for future reference, is quite stupid, and... Salty Cracker, can't believe I'm saying that, calling for a red wedding, obviously a reference to the Game of Thrones slaughter.
Yes, I was going to say that those two people I absolutely could see as, you know, you could make the argument for inciting violence there.
Yes.
But Tim and Alex, in fact, I think there is some footage from January 6th that would kindly dismiss any idea that Alex Jones was trying to incite violence when he's literally standing there with a megaphone saying, don't riot, people.
It's almost like you could presage what I got up next.
Oh, looky here.
Well, we're going to play that just so we can have on the record that the Frogman did nothing wrong.
We don't want to have a Kent State here. So, I love you. We're saving the Republic. This is beautiful. But please tell everyone you know, march to the other side. March.
Start to make a pass for us right there.
We're going to march. Trump is going to speak over here!
So it's actually very interesting he says march to the other side. Because in yesterday's congressional hearing, as we can see from the next tweet from Jack Posobiec, the Democrats actually admitted, with their little map there, that there was a rally planned all along at the other side of the Capitol. In front of the Supreme Court building. And it was 2 hours after Trump's speech. So it gave people enough time to move all the way through the Capitol area to the Supreme Court where they could peacefully and patriotically make their voices heard. So by the Democrats' own admission, Trump and his supporters did not plan on storming and occupying the Capitol. And perhaps a few fringe commentators said something very stupid, but to conflate everyone, including Tim Pool and Alex Jones, with that is entirely unfair. And it's just something the Democrats want to do to fit their narrative and hope to rake everyone over the coals because they're electorally floundering at the moment. So, even the Washington Post reporter, actually, in their visual timeline, if you can scroll down just a little bit. There we go. it actually says that the barricades were breached at about 1 p.m., but Trump was still speaking miles away at about 1:10 p.m. So, even the Washington Post, very adversarial, owned by Jeff Bezos, etc., admits Trump did not order them to go to do it directly, and by the time that Trump was still speaking at his address on all the way to the other side in front of the White House, the barricades at the Capitol were already being stormed by people in black masks, etc. But this obviously doesn't stop Democrats from making character attacks to fit their narrative. As we can see here, Alex Jones' bitter ex-wife, who lost the children in the custody battle, has volunteered to appear at the congressional hearings to testify against him, saying she has insider information that she believes is relevant to his prosecution.
Men, please be careful out there.
Yes, don't stick it in crazy. Just a bit of advice, personal advice as well. So, one person who won't be appearing at the hearings, unfortunately, is a gentleman by the name of Ray Epps, you may be familiar with. I believe you've covered this before, haven't you?
I am aware of the name Ray Epps, and I've also tangentially sort of remember some stuff. Remind me.
So Ray Epps is a person who is at, according to the New York Times, the center of a far-right conspiracy theory, which sees him as an FBI agent provocateur. He's ex-military. He's been reported on by Tucker Carlson and even asked about in the Senate as to where he was seen at January 6th inciting people to go into the Capitol by calling them directly, "We must go into the Capitol." But as of the as of yesterday's congressional hearings, the New York Times have put out an interview with him, which is quite revelatory. So I'm going to quote from the article.
It's very interesting that certain people who have been photographed in the Capitol on January 6th have been arrested and jailed for a very, very long time on some very flimsy charges.
Trumped up, you might say.
Yes, trumped up charges of trespassing, which, as far as I'm aware, you're not able to jail someone without any further charges for that for over a year and a half, but they have. And this Ray Epps, who is caught on video inciting violence, gets his own New York Times interview. That's very interesting, isn't it?
Oh, he's living entirely freely. He's actually got his dogs with him in the interview, which is very cute. So, from the article, Ray Epps has suffered enormously in the past 10 months as right-wing media figures and Republican politicians have baselessly described him as a covert government agent who helped to instigate the attack on the Capitol last year. I weep for you, sir. "I am at the center of this thing, and it's the biggest farce I've ever seen," Epps said. "It's just not right. The American people are being led down a path. I think it should be criminal." Interesting. To that end, Mr. Epps and his wife have been searching for a lawyer to help them file a defamation lawsuit against several of the people who have spread false information and accounts. Obviously, we at LotusEaters.com are just merely reporting the news which is in other outlets, and we do not take a stance on this. Please don't sue us.
I will say, this sounds an awful lot like he's had some lines fed to him.
Yes, it sounds like he's had legal advice.
And this sounds a lot like PR mentioning that he's got his dogs with him as well. "Oh, he's got his dogs with him, don't you understand? Bad people don't have cute dogs. Only good people have cute dogs." It's the same sort of PR that they bring out. Do you remember a few years ago there was one of those YouTubers who got called out for basically advertising gambling to kids, and he did it.
Was this Team On?
Yes, and yep. He did the apology video where he brought his dog on for sympathy points.
For God's sake.
That's what this is. This is the T. Martin apology video, except yes. Regarding January 6th.
Yes, he's the T. Martin of insurrectionists. So, it's not a sentence I never thought I'd say in my professional career. "The truth needs to come out," Mr. X explained, petting his dogs. While Epps was a participant in some of the events that unfolded on January 6th, the claim that he inspired the Capitol riot in a false flag plot is solely based on the fact that he has never been arrested and therefore must be under the protection of the government. The interview transcripts show that Mr. Epps told agents that he had spent much of his time at the Capitol seeking to calm down other rioters, an assertion supported by multiple video clips. And then we cut a little bit later. One of the moments Mr. Epps said he regrets most from his stay in Washington took place right before the night before the Capitol attack, when he joined his son and a friend for a pro-Trump rally at Black Lives Matter Plaza. The fact that it's still named that is egregious.
I didn't even realize it was called that in the first
place. Oh, yeah, it's had its name changed. Wonderful.
Pain.
During the event, he was videotaped by a right-wing provocateur, because it matters who's holding the camera, apparently, encouraging people to go inside the Capitol on January 6th in what he described, even at the time, as a form of peaceful protest. So I don't think they're going to be as charitable to other people saying we must go inside the Capitol, particularly when it says he's seeking to calm down rioters from other video clips, but right before the night before, he's saying they must occupy the Capitol directly, something that President Trump, that Alex Jones, and Tim Pool never said, but they're being smeared in a similar way.
And it can't have been a peaceful protest anyway. They didn't set anything on fire.
Exactly. They abided by the guide ropes, the monsters. The clip has also been used to depict Mr. Epps as a man who not only urged people to riot in the Capitol, but then also evaded prosecution. I think the fact that you haven't prosecuted him is done that. The Justice Department has not publicly addressed its decision not to charge him, but the legal definition of incitement requires a person's words to cause an immediate threat of danger, not one that could possibly occur the following day.
But Alex Jones saying, "Let's not riot, guys, let's just move over to the other side of the Capitol," now that is very threatening and very dangerous.
Well, I didn't realise the statute of limitations was less than 24 hours, so if you went out and said, "Kill X," and someone did it lunchtime the next day, apparently you're off the hook.
Brilliant.
I'll
make a note of that.
A staggering legal standard. So apparently Democrats no longer believe that telling people to occupy the Capitol is an incitement to violence, but Trump telling supporters peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard and to go home in peace and love is an incitement to violence. We are living genuinely in a 1984 Newspeak-style world here. Remember, a man identified Epps as seen in this video, was inciting people to go into the Capitol and was then booed by the crowd as a Fed. So people were very skeptical as to his motivations for telling them to occupy the Capitol at the time. So this doesn't just come from nowhere. This was the crowd on video at the time who were saying this. Again, we do not endorse the crowd's statements. Please don't sue us. The Washington Post also have this video, which purports to show Epps involved in the barricade breach. This is the Washington Post, again, who have created the timeline of January 6th and are very, very on board with the January 6th hearings and calling it an insurrection. So this has not come from nowhere.
I mean, it says right there, Trump supporter Ray Epps breaching the Capitol grounds. I mean, says it all, really.
We are just reading the facts, ladies and gentlemen.
We're just asking for some consistency
here. I'm just asking questions. When asked about how many FBI agents participated in January the 6th by Ted Cruz, or if any committed any violent crimes, and if Mr. Epps was involved in the FBI, it was an agent or an informant, Jill Sanborn, executive assistant at the FBI's National Security Branch, said, "Sir, I can't answer that," and that she could not discuss the specifics of sources and methods of the FBI. So we have a clip for this of Senator Ted Cruz grilling her, just so you can see for yourself.
Ms. Sanborn, I want to turn to the FBI. How many FBI agents or confidential informants actively participated in the events of January 6th?
Sir, I'm sure you can appreciate that I can't go into the specifics of sources and methods.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants actively participate in the events of January 6th? Yes or no?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants commit crimes of violence on January 6th?
I can't answer that, sir.
Did any FBI agents or FBI informants actively encourage and incite crimes of violence on January 6th?
Sir, I can't answer that.
So, for an investigation agency, you really don't know an awful lot, do you?
Well, I mean, I think we all know at this point that asking a federal employee a question that they respond with, I can't answer that, means yes.
Yeah. Well, are you implying the deep state isn't transparent, Harry?
Perhaps.
How could you? I wouldn't transgress the Clintons in that way. So, the committee star witnesses are also starting to fold. We have, from a Daily Caller article, in an email sent to a former senior Trump official on February the 4th, Hutchinson, Cassidy Hutchinson, the woman who said that Trump tried to choke out a Secret Service agent and grab the wheel like Heath Ledger's Joker pushing his driver out of the truck in The Dark Knight. Apparently, she said that she had trouble securing a legal team and asked the former senior Trump official for help in getting contact with his fundraising organizations or attorneys. So when she was subpoenaed by January 6th, she contacted the Trump team directly, but didn't get response. And the reason was Mark Meadows didn't want to involve himself and compromise the transparency of the process. So he didn't just leave her hanging out to dry. He actually said, essentially, I don't want to compromise the legitimacy of the judicial process by implicating myself in influencing your testimony with my financial aid. And so it seems she has some sort of motive for cooking up this seemingly bogus story about Trump trying to take the wheel, specifically when she said it was a car that wasn't even there on the day. She implied that it was a presidential beast and it was actually a vague SUV. She said, I was subpoenaed by the January 6th committee on November the 9th, 2020, but was not formally served until Wednesday, January 26th, 2021. I have had difficulties... 2020.
I was going to say
that's there's a misprint in that article.
Yeah, the timeline seems a bit. Yeah. Oh yeah, it says sick 2021.
Yes. I've had difficulty securing a legal team. Was hoping you might be able to put me in contact with any fundraising organizations and/or attorneys that are involved in this process. And this was an email to the former Trump official. My aunt and uncle applied to refinance their home to loosen up some money since I don't have any much immediate family, but they weren't approved. So she was in dire financial straits, and so she may have felt motivated to revenge herself upon the Trump team. She also called the hearings BS and said a bunch of other derogatory remarks about the legitimacy of the process, but then suddenly becomes their star witness overnight, and Liz Cheney is weeping at the credibility of her testimony, even though it has more holes in it than Swiss cheese. So it seems that the January 6th committee is pretty much a farce. They don't have all that much information, but at least we have a very strong leader out on the campaign trail around the world, showing the world that American integrity is back in action. Let's take it away to Joe Biden.
I will once more return to the hallow ground of Yad Vashem to honor 6 million Jewish lives who were stolen in the genocide, and continue, which we must do every day, continue to bear witness. to keep alive the truth and honor of the Holocaust, horror of the Holocaust. Honor those we lost.
American exceptionalism indeed.
Yes, just for clarity, we do not share Joe Biden's statements that the Holocaust had any honor. But Joe Biden seems to have walked back this position preeminently months ago because he decided to insult the Nick Fuentes catboy constituency of American electorate. Let's play this.
Nazi sympathizers carrying Nazi flags using the...
So thank God the USA has protected itself from sober skateboarding beanie hat wearing political commentator, and the entire fate of the American Republic is in very safe liver spotted hands.
So it's all looking good. And moving from there, let's take a look at how compassionate infanticide is the greatest act of love a parent can show to their would-be child. So moving on from the January 6th hearing, obviously the other big thing that's been going on in American politics, the thing that has been taking up a lot of people's attention, because once again, nobody really cares about Jan 6th anymore, has been the remarkable overturning by the Supreme Court of the Roe v. Wade decision from, what was it, 1971 or 73?
73.
73, was it? Yes, thank you. Which was the thing that put in place a federal law because of the precedent it was that was set, making it so that every single state has to provide abortion, and they can only determine their own limits of what the abortion can be up to, whereas now the states can decide by themselves whether or not they want to allow abortion in the first place, which, if you're aware of how America is supposed to work, is actually going much more in line with the original Federalist aims of the writers of the Constitution, maybe not Hamilton, but the rest of them, certainly. And so this is actually a big win for America if Americans knew anything about the founding of their country or the history or the ideals that it was based on. And of course, we have the Democrats, who are prime suspect number one for being completely historically illiterate, not understanding that this is how America was supposed to work in the first place. And as a result, we have had a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing where they were talking about whether this was right and proper and truly moral to restrict the rights of women to murder their babies. Before we go any further, let's take a look at this recent video where Josh did an interview with Deborah Powney. You can check this out on the site or on YouTube, where they were talking about men experiencing domestic abuse. And I think this is relevant because, of course, who is the one person often left out of the table on discussions of abortion? Why, it is the men who might want to be fathers, the men who might want to have children, the men who perhaps if they'd knocked somebody up on a one-night stand, might be willing to take responsibility for the child, which I understand is not a big amount of people, but still, those people don't get their voices heard because it's only the woman's decision after all. And just to tell everybody as well that tomorrow, Connor and I will be doing a book club on Michael Knowles' Speechless, which by the time this is out on YouTube, you will be able to catch live. It's for premium members at 3:30 on July 15th, British summertime. And I think this is relevant, one, because a lot of what we're talking about right now will go into semantics and language games that where people try and reframe reality using the language that you speak. And also, there is, as far as you've told me, because I've not finished the book yet, quite a large section going over the original decision of Roe v. Wade, which should be very interesting. So check that out if you get the opportunity. Anyway, let's carry on. So the Daily Wire has a good article talking about what's been going on in this Senate committee meeting. And for anybody who watched the podcast yesterday, you will have seen a particular clip from it that Callum and I showed, wherein a law professor from Berkeley told Senator Josh Hawley that it was in fact transphobic that he was questioning her on whether women are in fact able to be pregnant or if men as well are. Josh Hawley, of course, had the sensible, responsible position of only women can get pregnant, to which he was accused of transphobia. So this is where the conversation is, not just in the streets, not just online, not just on Twitter, but in fact in the massive greatest political offices of the US. So
it really did remind me of Solzhenitsyn's stories about the people who were thrown in the gulags, and even still then they maintained a commitment to the party line, where there's no demand for logical consistency, but to stay at the end point, you have a utilitarian approach to the truth. And so you just keep you're a sophist. You just keep moving the goalposts as to what's actually being discussed so you can maintain your illogical conclusion. And it just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It just makes you look like an insane person.
Yeah, I think you're right in describing it as utilitarian, because I think the greatest happiness principle is behind all of this. It's the impetus behind the bike cook meme, the idea that, well, yes, it's pretty sad that my baby might be dead now, but hey, I don't have to worry about raising it now. Therefore, my happiness that I'm experiencing right now is of greater value than the sadness that comes with the baby not being born anymore. So, yeah, utilitarianism has been a scourge on human morality, as far as I consider it. But anyway, let's read through a little bit of this. So, Democratic witnesses during the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing this week gushed over abortion as an act of love and self-care, and we do have the clips for that that we'll get to in a moment, don't worry. The hearing was aimed at discussing abortion and the legal consequence of the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, which overturned Roe v. Wade, effectively kicking back abortion restrictions to the states themselves. In another shocking moment from the hearing, Planned Parenthood's Dr. Colleen P. McNicholas called abortion an act of love. During the hearing on Tuesday, GOP Senator Josh Hawley, just to give everyone a reminder of that clip we played, notably had a contentious exchange with abortion rights advocate and University of California at Berkeley law professor Kyra Bridges, who refused to say only women can get pregnant, and condemned Hawley as transphobic. Many women, she said, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy, so at least she's willing to concede that. Many cis women do not have the capacity for pregnancy.
No eggs. Empty egg cup.
Yeah, this is not breaking news to anyone who's been paying attention, but apparently this is something that needs to be stated. There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy. Nope. Well, depends how far along their surgeries these trans men are.
There are delusional people who think that they are the opposite sex that are still capable of pregnancy, but that does not make you the sex that you claim to be, nor particularly fitting to be a parent.
No, I would be very, very concerned about people raising children when you're like that. I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic, and it opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing them. The professor charged, later adding that Hawley was denying that trans people exist and pretending not to know they exist.
Believe me, we see you.
Yes, you make it very hard not to see you.
Yes.
And Daily Signal did an article on five things to take away from this Senate hearing, which I think sums up quite a bit of it quite nicely. The hearing began with a clip introduced by a Senator Dick Durbin, who is a Democrat of Illinois, who called the decision by the High Court to overturn Roe unprecedented.
Well, that's just untrue.
Well, of course,
because the Roe decision itself was unprecedented, so therefore we're returning it to precedent.
But the video presentation notably used the word woman to describe who would be most affected, and then we see, of course, just saying that women aren't the only ones who can get pregnant, so apparently I'm most affected. But then again, if somebody aborted my child with my permission, I would feel a little bit affected by that, but that's not what they're referring to. Senator Tom Cotton, who is a Republican, focused on the harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence made against the Supreme Court justices since the May 2nd leak of a draft of the Dobbs ruling and in the weeks since the official ruling was issued. Over the last few months, he said, we've seen a marked increase in violence and intimidation by pro-abortion groups. We saw people protesting outside of Kavanaugh's house, for instance. Left-wing mobs have gathered outside the homes of Supreme Court justices to try to intimidate them and affect their decision on the Hobbs case in a blatant act violation of federal law. And note as well, the person who leaked that initial decision still has not been investigated, still has not been found, still has not been charged for breaking federal laws.
Well, neither was the feminist group who stormed the Capitol during Kavanaugh's confirmation because they were so afraid he was going to institute the Handmaid's Tale. Not spoken about very much.
These are peaceful protests. These are peaceful protests. We've got different standards for those. And he continues saying that the weak and hopelessly partisan Attorney General Merrick Garland refused to enforce federal laws. Pregnancy resource centers are nonprofit organizations, because we go on to how Elizabeth Warren is saying that we need to get rid of pregnancy resource centers now because apparently they're evil, because they don't just immediately stab you in the gut. The second you walk through the door, they in fact try and help you with your pregnancy and maybe provide you with baby clothes for differing stages of the baby's development after they've been born. But that's the problem, isn't it? They want to help you give birth to the baby and then raise that baby, whereas they should really be helping you stab that baby. Take it.
That's going to get clipped.
Yeah. In the aftermath of the decision to overturn Roe, many of these centers have been vandalized or attacked. Centers have been, had their windows smashed and vulgar pro-abortion phrases spray-painted on their walls, and some radical activists have taken to firebombing the centers with Molotov cocktails. But of course, will we see a hearing of Elizabeth Warren's volatile comments about how we need to shut these places down, inspiring this kind of violence? Of course we won't.
Well, all you ever hear about is, oh, pro-life terrorists, and this is same thing with over in the UK. They're trying to create free speech buffer zones around abortion centres, so you can't protest or discuss abortion issues within about 150 yards, I think, or was it feet? I can't remember which one it is, around an abortion center. Mm. And the reason given was they said, oh, there's going to be, even though there's not been any acts of pro-life terrorism on British soil, yeah, we could import it from America. Would you like to note to me on the run-up to Roe v. Wade where the pro-life terrorism was versus an actual group that was harassing Supreme Court justice houses and threatening to kill them?
I guess it's just a mystery. And as well as that, I've had many conversations since this came about, because I have gone from being rather indifferent to abortion to becoming very strictly pro-life regarding this whole thing. Because the fact of the matter is that the whole point of all of this, like you say, free speech buffer around abortion centres is they're trying to obfuscate and conceal what abortion actually is. Because sadly, the clump of cells argument doesn't hold up past maybe a week or two, as soon as the baby starts to develop. And even then, it is still a life that is developing at that point. So I think we can all acknowledge that life begins at conception, as much as that may be a controversial take to some. But that means that they have rights, just the same as everybody else. Just because they are still developing within the womb does not mean that they don't have rights. After all, if I punched a pregnant woman in the gut, even though she was only 2 weeks pregnant, and as a result of that she miscarried, I would still probably be charged for a crime not only related to punching a woman in the stomach, but probably causing a miscarriage that probably could be considered murder as well. So it's rules in one way, but rules discarded completely in another. Standards for morals in one way, completely discarded when it's the woman's choice that she's doing this. And it's become very clear to me that the whole thing is just trying to conceal what abortion is, because it's murder. It's killing. It's killing, but we'll get to that later, because somebody just accepts it and acknowledges it. But anyway, I'll carry on. Cotton noted pro-life and religious organizations have also been the targets of pro-abortion activist violence. It's not the Supreme Court justices targeted, not just them. Pro-abortion groups, including one calling itself Jane's Revenge... Jane's Revenge, very peaceful name.
Irony.
Have claimed credit for firebombing a pro-life organization in Madison, Wisconsin, and numerous other firebombings, attacks, and acts of vandalism against pro-life groups in more than a dozen states. The same group even attacked and vandalized the campaign office of a Republican congressman this past weekend. Three separate churches in Maryland were attacked, all three vandalized and desecrated, and two were set on fire. Those attacks are currently under investigation, but are believed to be related to pro-abortion causes and groups. When are they going to get added to the terrorist lists, I wonder? Cotton also asked each of the witnesses whether they condemned the violence and vandalism by radical pro-choice groups. And the witnesses, all of the Democratic witnesses, they all said, oh, we condemn the violence, but also repealing Roe v. Wade is violence against women. How could you?
It's very much like Jeremy Corbyn when they ask him, oh, do you condemn anti-Semitism? Oh, I condemn all, but no, but do you do this? Oh, it's all. It's
do
all.
You can, do, but yeah, very specifically though, do you condemn this? Carrying on, as we mentioned, Elizabeth Warren has said the government should act against pregnancy resource centers and prevent them from operating, because I suppose you're trying to just force women who want to have children now to get abortions because... you're sick at this point. I can't describe
Simone
it.
Simone de Beauvoir position.
Yeah, I can't describe it in any other way that other than you're sick. A woman who wants help for her pregnancy because she doesn't want to terminate the pregnancy. No, we can't allow that to happen. We need to push you to abortion because we're the good guys.
But also, everyone should get free healthcare and a free job if you're unwilling to work.
Yeah, and it closes off as well with point five, which is pointing out that Democrats used to be more pro-life, Someone, Lee, addressed his Democrat colleagues and reminded several that they once supported the pro-life message. The doomsday calls from those on the left are ignoring common sense and ignoring human instinct about protecting the most vulnerable among us. Members of this committee, including some who are now attacking the Dobbs decision, once shared these views. He then submitted a copy of a letter written by Durbin in 1989 when he was in the House of Representatives, in which he said, "I believe we should end abortion on demand, and I continue to believe that the Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade should be reversed." So either this man has had a massive and disastrous change in his moral compass, or is just blowing wherever the political winds will take him, which is Washington.
Same with Biden. Yeah. Biden wrote almost exactly the same thing.
And it's even more impressive with Biden because he's an out-and-out Catholic, so... I know.
No.
But still, that's what he just likes.
He just likes the young boy pod.
Oh, no. But if we move on, we've got the clips from this just to make it very, very clear how shocking some of the things that are being said is and how shocking the things from the pro-abortion, the pro-baby murder side are. And some of the stuff that really, this is the sort of rhetoric that really started to change my mind on it, because it really shows how allowing abortions to go on, it really does devalue the idea of life in all other realms, because if this is how people are going to talk about the most vulnerable in society, how do you think they look at you? No wonder they can punch you in the face in the street because you said something they don't like and say that you're the violent one. No wonder that far left Antifa radicals can shoot a Trump supporter in the street just because they think that your life is not worth it because you disagree with them, when this is what's allowed to go on. So this is a Democrat, Danny Davis, saying about what, talking about forcing pro-life taxpayers to fund abortions. Play this clip.
I would think it would be like bringing light to darkness. Mm-hmm. I can recall living in rural America before the REA, and when things lit up, it was just totally different. Well, as we've heard, the Hyde Amendment is an unnecessary barrier to abortion care for people across the country, and repealing Hyde is a critical step in achieving economic and reproductive justice.
I don't see any justice in killing babies somehow.
No, especially considering a baby is entirely innocent and justice is meant to mean, without the social prefix, which means it's not justice, each person getting what they deserve, and no child deserves to be killed before they have a chance to walk in the world.
Exactly. And I think also, obviously, the framing there of bringing light into darkness, implying anybody who is pro-life is just evil. We are on Team Darkness. Ooh.
It's just not even that. It's just the perversity of believing that I'm in favor of child sacrifice. That's right. I'm the good guy.
Mm-hmm. And the Satanic Church have literally come out and said, yes, that child sacrifice is one of their rituals because they're attempting to get it classified as a religious thing.
Yeah,
so that it's protected under the First Amendment.
I can't wait for a religious exemption for the Taliban to take down 9/11 in the same framework.
I mean, if that's the standard we're going by. And then we've got this next one talking about abortion being liberating. So let's play this clip.
For some, abortion is liberation. There's a lot of good that comes from people's ability to access abortion, and I want to celebrate that.
Stunning and brave. Let's move on to this one. Let's move on to this next one. Let's play this.
Relatively smoothly, but what these restrictions are intended to do is try and stop people from having abortions. But abortion is healthcare. My abortion was the best decision I ever made. It was an act of self-love, and I'm here today to make sure that everybody who currently needs an abortion, who has had an abortion or will need an abortion, is not alone, no matter what the state tries to force upon us. Thank you so much, ladies.
It's an act of self-love, don't you know? And seeing as let's extend this logic a bit further. So if you catch your spouse, for instance, cheating on you, that makes you feel really bad. So apparently, using this argument, killing them in retaliation is just an act of self-love. I mean, if we extend the logic, it all falls apart, doesn't it?
The tragedy of it is, as well, is that she has now a moral incentive to never admit buyer's remorse, because if she does admit, "Oh my God, I've killed my own child," it's almost an unbearable weight to live with. So, just, yeah, that's just sad.
It is very sad, and I don't think these people understand the decisions they're truly making. And then we've got the a classic one, the one that I thought I'd save the best to last, when they start to extend the argument. They start to test the logic of this, and they say, okay, then, well, if you're for abortions up to the point of being able to give birth, what about infanticide? And let's play this clip.
I assume you agree with infanticide, the killing of a child, a perfectly healthy child at birth.
I don't accept the basis of that question, but I do believe abortion is health care.
I'm talking about, do you agree? I know, I get that, but do you agree? I mean, are you in, do you support infanticide, killing a child after he's born?
I do not agree with the basis of that question, but I do believe that abortion is health care.
Okay, so I'll take that as a yes, you do agree.
Yeah, so just completely trying to dodge the question, and this is what really shows to me that this becomes a very slippery slope, is that it does devalue all life on the basis of arbitrary measures of time. It's only when you're, you know, it starts off with, okay, we want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. And then it turns into up till the point of being able to give birth. And then if you want to extend it past that point, it's like up until the point that they're self-sufficient. Yep. You know, up until they're 5, up until they're 6, up until they're 7. You know, you can extend it using this kind of argument, because the argument in and of itself is one against the right to life. And that's what really, really pushed me against it. But it's very interesting to see the perspective of those on the other side, because we really are experiencing two different conversations at the same time over the same thing. So if we go over, we've got LGBTQ Nation. Just scroll up. I'm not going to read anything from this. But we've got that exchange that I read out from earlier, where she was calling him Josh Hawley transphobic for asking if women are the ones who get pregnant and give birth. Yes. We've got LGBTQ Nation with this stunning headline: law professor humiliates Josh Hawley during Senate committee hearing. And it just makes me think you must have been watching a completely different video than I watched. It even includes, this article is basically just a transcript of that discussion with nothing, no context, no added context to make it better. It literally just starts off by going, read this. Oh, she completely owned him. She got him. She got one over on him. And it's just the discussion which I look at and go, this is nonsense.
Yeah, the postmodernists were right about incompatible interpretations, unfortunately.
Sadly, yes. And then we go over to The Nation, which posted this article on Twitter last month, saying, when we withdraw from gestating, we stop the life of the product of our gestational labor. And there's something, this is where the language games really come into it, because there's something so dehumanizing about referring to a baby in the womb as gestating and
a product.
Abortion as the stopping the life of the product of our gestational labor. There is something disgustingly dehumanizing, because they leftists, you know, for all their faults, they do recognize there is a lot of power in being able to manipulate reality, because we understand reality through the language that we use. So if all of a sudden it goes from killing a baby to stopping the life of the product of our gestational labor, and I imagine they would simplify that even further to stopping the gestational labor in the first place, it becomes very easy to disconnect. Really easy to disconnect from the reality of what you're actually talking about and make it so that it is just a simple decision of, I don't want a baby right now, actually. Yeah, I probably should have, you know, asked him to wear a condom, but I really don't feel like it. So I'm just going to go get rid of it, just like it's a spot that you're popping. It's disgusting. Oh. And if we go over to the next one, just let's take a look a little bit more at this article. And here we go. It's just full mask off. Abortion involves killing, and that's okay. I mean, at the very least, they are acknowledging what's going on here, and this is by Sophie Lewis. If you meet her in a bar, I'd keep your distance. To be pro-choice is to be against forced life, and this is where we end up. This is where the language games get played. Sadly, reality does force a lot of things on you, and being able to coexist with people in a society, which is what humans do because we're social creatures, does involve having to abide by certain standards that we all agree upon. And this is what leftism as a whole is arguing against, because what they want is freedom from restrictions. They don't want freedom from tyranny. They want freedom from reality. And if that reality includes killing your baby, then we'll deny it. And when it gets down to it, when you really push us to it, we'll go, fine, yeah, we are killing the baby. That's fine.
As Mao once said, nature is a revolutionary enemy, and this is the least natural thing I've ever seen.
It really is. I won't read too much of this because you can read it for yourself. It's quite stunning. But I'll just read the opening paragraph. So in 2019, I published a kind of manifesto, Full Surrogacy Now, whose opening line is, it is a wonder we let fetuses inside us. That alone. That alone. the idea that the process of having a child is something that we should be against. Women shouldn't let fetuses inside us, as if that's
an occupying force.
Yes. To dismiss it to purely like almost scientific terms like that, to take all of the emotion out of it, all of what's sacred about it, is disgusting. The opening pages are given over to my extended pian to the processes of gestating in all its shockingly grisly biology, its everyday sublimity. Whereas in other species, a female can often discard or expel a pregnancy at will. Sorry to break it to you, we're not other species, as much as the furries might wish it were the case. In our species, a hyper-invasive placenta puts the gestator at risk of lethal hemorrhage. Maybe you should have thought about that. Before you got pregnant.
Why are you calling women gestators?
It's well, because we can't say women,
yeah,
can we?
Yeah, true, yeah, fair point.
Locked down, our body becomes a daredevil participant in a wrestling match we cannot easily quit. From this starting point, I make a case for rethinking human gestation as real and currently often deadly, dangerous labor, deserving of maximal support. So we've got down to the idea that pregnancy is labor. Once again, leftists wrap back around to what we already knew. The controversial part is that a key correlate of viewing gestation as labor is that forcing someone to gestate against their will is forced labor. Oh no, I would have thought the communists would have been perfectly fine with this.
Well, if you consent to sex, you consent to the possibility of having a child. Therefore, it's not forced.
There you go.
Done.
There, sorted. And with this, to counter all of this, all I'm going to say is I stand with King Thomas. King Clarence Thomas, look at what a jovial man he is. This is a man who knows he's just saved uncountable lives across the country. And you know what? God bless you, Clarence, and thank you for your service.
Absolute king.
Let's move on to the video comments.
The people who did the 1905 renovation, whom I expect are the ones that built the sheep house, they saw no problem with wooden lintels, and why would anyone, really? It's not as though wood is prone to suffering damage from woodworm or humidity that might cause it to sag over time.
Very interesting. Let's move on.
It does sound like an old wizard.
So part of the reason I've done this series of videos on pleasure and fulfillment is because every time you guys do a bit about why women in today's society are unhappy, it's almost always some variation of the exact same story. Some woman in her 30s or 40s who's distant from her family, has never been married, has no children, doesn't care about her job, and just wants to make enough money to travel and try different types of wine, has written about why her life feels pointless. And it's because they've bought into the idea that the key to a happy life is just making enough money to constantly pleasure yourselves rather than build sources of fulfillment in your life.
It's the hedonic calculus. They're unable to delay gratification, and therefore that's why they're going into, almost voluntarily, the own nothing and be happy mentality of everything's a sort of service to me. I don't have any anchorage in one particular place. I'm a universal human, and I'll just take the soma, live in the pod, and eat the bugs.
Yeah, we sadly do, as a wise man once said, live in a society.
Yes.
And we live in a society that encourages very high time preference, which means that people want stuff now and they're not willing to sacrifice what they can get now for later. And there's a number of different reasons for this, but it does lead to these kinds of damaging and harmful effects. And people don't even realize it. The sad thing about these women is that it's so clear to us why it is that they're so empty and unfulfilled in their lives, but they just can't see it. They just can't see it. And it's really sad, to be perfectly honest.
Should have listened to Stefan Molyneux while you had the chance.
Portman. Let's carry on.
So just a quick white pill regarding Abe's assassination. Evidently, his party won in a landslide, among whom is Ken Akamatsu, the writer of Love Hina. You know, I don't know anything about the series, actually. I just know it's slice of life and turtles are involved. He's actually pretty based regarding the liberal agenda. It's pretty open about his contempt of left-wing social justice warriors. Also, he's leading an effort to archive all of the out-of-print manga and such stuff. Pretty good policy.
Oh.
One, speak for yourself. My missus is all right, thank you very much. But also, if he really is doing anime, I mean, can we have a word with him about his imported degeneracy over to the West?
Hey. Once again... Just because it's a medium for telling stories, just because cuties as a thing doesn't mean I'm going to discard all of Western cinematography.
Sorry, where's
films.
The respirator for the tank of copium that you need to huff?
Once again, your arguments are nonsensical, and I'm just, I do find it funny that now there's a political party in charge of Japan that literally has anime writers. Yes,
true.
I mean, the people want what they want.
Tech YouTuber European Law found a review of The Lord of the Rings in an old communist paper, which is precisely what you'd expect with a subtle twist. The critic clearly associates the orcs with socialism, industry, and the workers, but seems literate enough to know that the orcs are fundamentally evil and that such a comparison must be unflattering to the communist regime. Whatever the motivation, this translation and description is deliciously funny and well worth the watch. You may see, underneath the video, the comment I added asking for permission to use it and how keen he was for the promotion on your site. Maybe a Lotus Eaters could interview this YouTuber about his funny discovery.
Well, I definitely want to watch the video now, because I've always had that sort of thought of where the plundering of the burning of the Westfold and the Isengard orcs incinerating every tree around is definitely the irresponsible industrial narrative versus the natural world.
Ah, fair play. Well, I'll let you jump on that one. Everyone else in this office seems to be a Tolkien scholar, other than me.
I'm not a scholar, I just really like it.
Yeah, I've not read them in years. I've not watched them in... I've not watched them in 3 years. I need to go back through the extended editions.
I admit, I used to play the miniatures back when Games Workshop still used to do them.
So. Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool, actually. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's how
Nobody's like ever called me cool for doing that.
I sound like such a nerd saying that's pretty cool. Anyway, let's move on to the written comments, because that's all the video comments that we had right there. So I'll go through mine on comics. Hammurabi the Sixth says, I was promised a white pill today, Harry. You better not let me down. And he responds to himself, I was not let down. Thank you. You're welcome, Hammurabi.
Neither was I, though I do wish you'd save the white pill for the last segment, because that last one was harrowing.
Yes, but at the same time, I think the white pill of that is they still overturned Roe v. Wade.
True.
So, I mean, we can still get to dance, not necessarily on the graves, because I think that would have some negative connotations.
Yes.
In this,
we'll rain dance the tears of mad hoes.
Yes. General Hyping, Chinese Internet Battalion, says the Ripperverse has been another success story of putting good storytelling above political messaging. Absolutely. He also says, I'd be interested to hear Harry's take on the Boys TV series, as season one started off well, but the later series, in my opinion, have devolved into a sludgy mess of awful writing in Seth Rogen's personal fantasies. Sadly, this happens with everything Seth Rogen does. I really enjoyed Invincible, the Amazon Prime animated series that he put out last year. And sadly, though, I've only read a little bit of Invincible, but I've read the arc that first season was adapting, and they did change a lot of characters purely for the sake of including diversity, and they made the character that they replaced his love interest with insufferable.
She was terrible.
Shrill, whiny, illogical. I know I'm just describing women, but bear with me. This was a particularly bad case, and they had scenes where she was sat at this university that she was going to apply to, and she was like, oh, you know, they do really good courses. They even have a really fantastic social justice course. Yeah. And I was just like,
"That's
there's Rogan. There's Seth Rogen." Hyping can finishes off with, it pales in comparison to the original source material. I am a big fan of Garth Ennis. I've read all of Preacher and really enjoyed it. I have not yet read The Boys comic book series, though.
I wasn't a fan, I'm going to be honest. I mean, the first season was better than the first arc of the comics, I think. I don't know what they've done with Black Noir in the series, but I highly doubt
I am aware that they've changed a lot.
Yeah. And
which
is
unsurprising.
I have not seen the third season yet, just because the second season was so utterly rubbish yeah. that I decided to skip it.
I was living in a world of cope for a few weeks during the second series, because I really enjoyed the first series.
It's fantastic.
And was watching the second series and was like, no, it can't be this bad. It must be building to something. And then when the last episode focuses entirely on a scenario which is incredibly contrived, really stupid, where Homelander at any point could literally just kill everybody and get away with it, and he lets them blackmail him for no particular reason. I forget the exact reason, but I remember it being stupid. The whole thing was contrived. The whole thing was completely illogical, and I hated it. The third series I have only watched a bit of, while the missus has been watching it at home, and what I have seen seems to have been a massive improvement, although there was still some very heavy-handed allegories towards, don't you understand that American patriots are racists and Nazis, which is insufferable, but I suppose if you want to watch The Boys, you kind of kind of just got to accept it. But this is why I only watched it in passing and didn't pay any full attention to it, because I didn't feel like being called a Nazi for 8 episodes straight. Yeah. So there's my scatterbrained opinion on The Boys. George Happ, Eric July is one of the most principled cultural commentators, often advising his audience to not give money to the people who hate them. Yes, I agree. With his respect for canon and hatred of multiverses, retcons, and tokenized characters, I have high expectations of the Ripperverse. In other words, I'm justifiably hyped. And so you should be. One of the things that really endeared me to Eric July when I first started watching him was his just complete breakdown of the myth of the lie that the X-Men was started as some kind of political allegory for racism and civil rights, when Stan Lee back in the day, even he was like, no, I just wanted a character of these cool people, a comic of cool characters with all these powers, and I thought mutants was the best way to go about it. I mean, it was only really in the late 70s with Claremont that the whole political allegorical message started to become put into the comic book, and even then he was much less heavy-handed about it than
Eric's made great arguments against the sort of creative inhibitions caused by multiverses. So I was sort of apathetic before, just because I like figuring out the metaphysics of a comics universe as a puzzle. But then he did
read Grant Morrison's Multiversity.
I've read Pax Americana. I haven't read the full.
Pax Americana is probably one of the best issues. Yeah, in it's, I mean, it's got Frank Quitely in
it. It's the Watchmen iteration.
I used the Charleston characters.
Yeah. Well, yes, it was. Yeah. I used some of it for my dissertation for my master's, actually. So it was good fun. I thought you were going to say Super Gods, then, which I think you brought up earlier.
I did bring up Super Gods. I've not read it, but I'm aware of the arguments he makes in it.
We should probably cover it at some point. Yeah, but Eric basically said that multiverses are kind of they're parasitic rather than actually creative, because you just inherit what someone else has done and then you use it as a vehicle for your own social powers, or just because you're not very imaginative, you just change one thing up and ends up looking like an Image Comics character from the 90s.
Yeah, that's a little bit similar to my argument that I've kind of had in the back of my head for a long time, which is that basically after a comic book writer hands over their property to any other writer, it becomes extended fan fiction.
I guess so. Some writers,
obviously, that's being a bit contentious.
Yeah, but some writers have executed pretty well on the logical premises of that. Like, I think Scott Snyder's New 52 run for Batman was very good because it was reinventive.
I agree. I forget what his name. Joe Kelly wrote the definitive run on Deadpool when he didn't create the character of Deadpool, even though he actually created the character of Deadpool as we know him now. Because at first he was just some boring, bland, Liefeld creation, a ripoff of Deathstroke. Anyway, carrying on.
Yep.
GL says, if you want a good story about superpowered individuals in a world which evolves with their appearance, you should check out Parahuman or The Wormverse. It's a huge web novel and not a comic, but I'm sure it would make a fantastic comics universe.
Yep. Ooh, it's great. It's a really good novel series.
Sounds very interesting. Nice. Bilbo T. Baggins says, the first comic is already printed and paid for by Eric July, so it's not really crowdfunded as such. It was just that was a key point in his pitch for this. Oh, fair play. Sorry if I misrepresented it a little bit. Let's go on to your segment.
We'll do. Hammurabi the Sixth. So Tim was misrepresented in front of the US government in a negative way. When's the slander lawsuit? I believe he said he was looking into whether or not that's a possibility on the recent Timcast podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are some sort of congressional protections there, though, because I know at least in the UK, you do have parliamentary immunity for if you do get something wrong. Because I know Chris Bryant misrepresented Nigel Farage in saying that he'd taken Russian money and Farage couldn't do anything about it.
That's so nice that the people who are in charge get to set rules about how you can't call them out for the terrible things that they do. I would love it if, to bring down the American government, people could just sue them. Yeah. Sue them out of existence. I mean, the deficit's already bad enough. So.
The Amber Heard approach.
Yep.
Free Will 2112. The January 6th committee is a kangaroo court, the kind familiar to historians of the 1930s and the 1940s. A true court would be objective and call witnesses and have cross-examination and not deal in uncontested smears. Yes, but you are under the illusion that you have freedom of due process in your country rather than just a commitment on paper, unfortunately.
Yes, you seem to think that the elites will treat you as one of them.
Yeah, when they say sorry. When they say our democracy, they just mean their oligarchy, of course. Alex Ogle, Rep Raskin is the most execrable liar. I recall his performance at the second impeachment trial of Trump. For someone who is educated in law, he broke all courtroom rules and put up the most highly edited videos and tweets. The only highlight was watching Nick Riccata tearing him to pieces live. Yo, I happen to remember, actually, during the second impeachment trial, when they looked at a lot of the sources for Trump's supposed indiscretions, or was it actually the It was the second impeachment, yeah, because I'm thinking the first impeachment was Ukraine, wasn't it? And the second impeachment was January 6th. So if you looked at loads of their sources, it was just op-eds from, like, The Hill.
Ah, yes, the most trustworthy source of evidence. Okay.
Yeah, so rather than first-hand sources, it was just, this journalist said this, but they were fractionating quotes within the... It was insane. Supreme Duck endorsed the name. Tim Pool was a moderate political person, the great news commentator, agreed. The Congress is out of line by misusing his words. Also, where is this far right? Are they in the woods? Is that why I never see any far rightists around? Far right is basically just a spectral term to mean I don't like you. It's, as we'll cover tomorrow in the live book club, it's Herbert Marcuse's repressive tolerance in action. As the Overton window shifts, more of your ideologically incorrect enemies lie outside of it, and that just means you can throw them out into the wilderness. Spartan Lycurgus. I'm getting used to these names, I apologise. The idea that saying it's going to be wild is calling for violence is completely blank. It's going to be wild is how I would describe a party. Like, make sure you're at Harry's place after work. We're celebrating his new promotion. It's going to be wild. I never say something like, hey, make sure you're at the office tomorrow morning. We're going to shoot Carl and take over the company. It's going to be wild. Stop rumbling our plans.
Carl can watch this, you fool.
Well, by the time it goes out. Confused AF. Baselessly describe him as... So no actual refutation these descriptions are accurate, then. They're just... sure that no one has the evidence. This is the same attempt at linguistic sleight of hand employed by Juicy Smoyer's lawyers. My client did not participate in the attack. This is the only correct because there was no attack. Very true. Bleach Demon, great name. January 6th is the Reichstag fire that the Democrats have been having wet dreams over for decades. Can you imagine Joe Tarto with the Enabling Act? No wonder New York has nuclear PSAs. Also press the flesh. Yeah, apparently New York Times published a surviving a nuclear holocaust article the other day. That's not worrying at all.
That's very, very interesting and very, very concerning.
On to the abortion comments, if we must.
Yes, Andrew Narog says the left is like some self-loathing, child-sacrificing eco-cult, and it's insane how out-and-out evil they are willing to be, yet have support of nearly half the West for their blatantly immoral views. Yep, I mean, nice summation there, thank you. George Happ says, so the baby killers finally admit what abortion is, and we're all at the, and that's a good thing, part of the narrative. In the words of Colonel Carl Jenkins, it's afraid. Yeah, I mean, this is what we've got to push back against. Rose Ganella, infanticide is an act of love. I'm sure that that's the line the Aztec priests fed the populace as they were dragging their children to the altar to have their hearts cut out. Probably. And here is some...
I've seen this one. This is interesting.
Yeah, here is a critical comment. And honestly, I do welcome criticism for these sorts of things. So thank you very much for sending it in. Jack Taylor says, there is a buffer around abortion clinics because Bible-bashing losers like to heckle and verbally assault young women going through an incredibly tough time. I've seen this firsthand. And if people are being basically dicks to these women, I don't support that.
Well, it's not an intelligent tactic anyway. You're not going to convince anyone telling them they're going to go to hell.
Yeah, they're of course going to actually probably be more resolved in their positions to go ahead with it when they see that is happening. So I don't support that. I think it's a stupid thing to do. Lotus Eaters are making it really hard to maintain the subscription with some of the borderline religious rhetoric in this segment. Well, I'm sorry if the rhetoric didn't really appeal to you, but this is honestly... how I feel now.
Notice we didn't quote any biblical scripture in our arguments, much like actually the Roe v. Wade overturning decision. We're just saying it as an individual rights position.
I'm saying it from a natural rights position.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Abortion being safe, legal and rare is an oxymoron because it's never safe for the child being killed. And you say here, women are going through an incredibly tough time. Well, so is the baby that's being murdered in their womb and never asked for it. So perhaps have some consideration for the innocent unborn child.
Well, I will just continue there. There is a safe and moral window in which to remove cells from the host before they become a child.
Nope.
I mean, once again, you give that a few days and that suddenly changes from a clump of cells into something that is developing. I mean...
Host is doing the same linguistic thing as the other article.
Yes, sadly. And the fact of the matter is, I'm going to use the Matt Walsh argument here, which is that even when it is just a clump of cells, it has now become a unique DNA pattern, which doesn't replicate anything else that's on the earth right now, making it a unique individual, whether you like it or not. Just be like, there is a safe and moral window in which to remove an acorn from the ground before it becomes a tree. Once again, sad to say, Jack, you are engaging in the same dehumanizing language. This is why abortion is such a big issue, because if we allow it, we dehumanize the value of life in the first place. And sadly, it seems I'm sorry if you disagree with us on this, but it seems that you seem to have fallen prey to that as well. I can only hope that you can continue to support us despite the fact that you disagree with us on this subject. I hope we have some agreement elsewhere, and that's what led you to supporting us in the first place. But I really do disagree with you on that, and I thank you anyway for sending in your comments so that we could respond to it.
Also, quickly, I hope you change your mind and have your own kids someday instead.
Well, he might have his own kids. I'm not going to make any assumptions.
Well, yeah, true, possibly,
there.
but...
Yeah, Shaker Silver says, despite the posturing, I do believe Roe being shot down has demoralized Democrats more than energized them to turn out later in the year. Possibly. Especially with elections still months away for the pain to be numbed. If anything, it would encourage more Republicans to come out to make sure their legislators implement abortion limits now. That is
Agreed.
Absolutely true, given that there is more power to the states now. Yeah, I can see how that would affect it. Maureen Peters, there are 16 states in which babies who survive the late-term abortion and who are capable of surviving outside of the womb can be left to die. And this is where we're talking about the complete and utter devaluing of life that comes with this. They are not recognized as individuals with rights. According to Planned Parenthood, the decision to help the baby should be between the patient and the healthcare provider. And just as a advice to anybody who might disagree with us on this take, I would recommend, because he is a doctor and he has seen it firsthand, reading some of Ron Paul's accounts of abortions when he was a younger doctor, when he was still undecided on the whole issue, and he went to visit abortion clinics and he saw in the hospitals and the abortion clinics what actually happened. And those accounts are so harrowing. And these are of people, these are of babies that were well before 6 months. Well before anything where you would probably say that, oh, it can survive outside the womb, for instance, and it still really does change your perspective on a lot of things. Some politicians are pushing for the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, but this bill has failed to pass and become a law several times, I believe.
Yes, true. Yes. The Democrats voted against it in 2020, and then yesterday the Daily Wire reported that five children in Minnesota were born after an abortion and were just left to die on the operating table.
That's horrifying. That's absolutely horrifying, and hence what's really changed my perspective on it. Anyway, just one last one to make it so that it's a bit less downbeat. Yeah. So the left does not only want to make abortions freely available, they now want to make them mandatory. It's almost as if they want to engage in some form of population control. Yes, Colin, it really is, isn't it? And we'll leave you on that note. Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I hope it's not been quite as depressing and harrowing as yesterday's was. If not, I'm sorry. I tried my best. Anyway, we'll see you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock British Standard Time. Thank you so much for tuning in. You all have a great day.